Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
All right, welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. And if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Hi, my name is Ari Celli. I live in Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I'm also a licensed clinical alcohol and drug counselor. And I am the chief operating officer of Tin High.
Awesome. So how did you get into the industry?
I think most of the stories start where you don't really know where you're going. You just kind of land in different spaces. But I went back to school. I knew I wanted to be a social worker. I didn't know I was going to do psychotherapy. But it just seemed like the next natural progression. And at the time, I was interested in working with a different population, but I had a history of working with substance use disorder. I used to do tech work, so I would be the person who would maybe check the bags or do an intake, or they used to call us glorified babysitters. So I would pretty much watch the clients that were in residential treatment for substance use. And when I graduated, that agency actually called me and made me an offer to come back and work for them in a different capacity. And I did, and I stayed with them for quite some time. And I went from doing clinical work there to doing outpatient management. So I managed a census of about 120 people. And then after that, there was a corporate takeover, and they kept some people to their Medicaid population when they were serving, they were retaining that portion of the business. It wasn't part of the takeover. And so they kind of cherry picked people to stay. And I was one of those people. And at that time, I became a clinical manager. I was really acting clinical director of that agency. And that had a census of about 75 people. But that was through almost all levels of care except for detox. So we would have residential treatment, partial hospitalization treatment, intensive outpatient treatment, and then outpatient level treatment. So that's kind of the continuum of treatment for substance use disorder.
Awesome. And so go ahead.
No, and then I just never looked back. So
cool. So I guess, like, as of now, can you just tell me kind of what a typical patient is for you? Like, you know, what kind of patient would get the most value, you know, from working with you?
Right. So right now I work at an agency that primarily has been focusing on youth. So we see about 156. That was just this last quarter. We saw 156 unduplicated youth over the course of a 3-month period. And this agency, we do provide clinical services. It is for adolescents who are struggling with substance use. So we're kind of like a after-school drop-in center. There's a pool table out there in the back. There's a fold-down screen with a beautiful projector, high-end quality projector. They have a brand new PlayStation. And almost all the staff members here are people in long-term recovery. So they're what's called a peer recovery support specialist. So they're certified to deliver peer services. And so we just create a place that provides unconditional love and support. So if you have an adolescent who's struggling with substance use, you could come and utilize this service, and it's completely free. And then another portion of what we offer is housing, long-term housing for people who need outpatient services, adults. So we have about 41 beds. We're about to get another 15 beds online, hopefully by the beginning of next month, February 1. And so that would be people who are chronically unhoused, who really these 90-day treatment models are not sufficient. Because these are people who have either come from prison, from incarceration for extended periods of time, or have been chronically homeless. So we try to keep them in services. Our average length of stay is 7 months. So within 7 months, they get 3 groups a week. They get case management, intense case management. They get vocational training. They have access to a member of the state every Friday, so they can get whatever kind of benefits that the state offers them. They get transportation should they need it. And then also the peer recovery support services that we have here do go over to those homes and provide that service should they have the desire to do that.
Awesome. So I guess, like you mentioned, right, that it's free for the patient. So do you have, like, you know, a contract with the government, or who's funding all these beds in this facility?
So the beds for the For the people who are the adults who are receiving outpatient services, where we get them about 7 months. So for those that's sober living, it's fully self-sustaining through MCOs, managed care organizations. So we bill insurance for outpatient level of care. And if someone's appropriate for outpatient level of care, they stay with us. We make the argument that they would need outpatient level of care for X amount of time. And we go up against what's called utilization review. We go up against with the insurance companies to advocate for them to get that extended period of time. And that pays for their stay. They also get some type of, a lot of them have, maybe they have TANF or they have SNAP, you know, financial funding for food. We don't provide food. But really the point is for them to get to a place where they can kind of stand on their own and save up some money so that they can actually, you know, a lot of times people say, well, being in recovery, that should be your main focus. And it's like, well, it's really hard for people to stay in recovery long-term when they can't feed themselves or, you know, they have family members that are relying on them to provide. So, and then the youth portion gets funded from the federal government. So we're one of the few agencies that receive funding for treatment, for recovery, and for prevention services. So we receive funding for all three, which is usually not characteristic. Usually people just stick in one lane.
Right.
So we're kind of all over.
For sure. Well, I feel like, you know, it looks like a lot of people in this space have a big challenge when it comes to staffing. So is that something that you guys also experience?
Yeah. So the staffing, there is high turnover in mental health services, just a blanket across the board. And I have experienced that in other agencies that I've managed. Here at this agency, I don't find that as much. And I think that's because we, number one, prioritize the growth of our employees. So we just had somebody recently who was trying to apply for, she's a person in long-term recovery. She was trying to apply for a lesser licensure because of her background. And so I'm like championing her to apply for the bigger licensure. And so she just went before the state board. We submitted 45 letters to the board and we were all on the call waiting for her. And they ended up giving her the right to practice at a higher level of mental health. So, you know, the trajectory of her life is going to change dramatically because her earning potential has changed dramatically. And so we really understand that it's more about professional development and giving people kind of that home base. So we have not seen turnover. We have seen growth and we're super lucky for that. So
awesome. So what would you say? So I guess like if it's not staffing, like what would you say is the biggest challenge that you face within the company?
So I think a big issue. So there's many different pieces. So I'll just stick with one. And then if we want to talk about other ones, we can. But let's say you're a block grant recipient as we are. That funding is very, very, it's not unrestricted. It's very restricted for specific things. And sometimes as an agency, you really need to be nimble. You need to be able to make changes. You need to be able to kind of seize opportunities. And because the funding is restricted, that gets to be a little bit complex. And you kind of are restricted to delivering the services that were promised, you promised to deliver, you know, for receiving this funding. And you can't really take it back. So you have to have really long-term strategic business plan and commit to that. So that is difficult. I would say that another difficult part is dealing with the managed care organizations. That's really difficult. And even with the reimbursements for grant funding, sometimes they're 3 or 4 months behind. And if you're an agency that's trying to make payroll and trying to do all these other things with growth, it's really difficult to be 3 months behind. I'll give you an example. We went and applied for this grant, and it was a small grant. I don't know why they invited us to go really, but we went and we wrote for it. And as we were sitting in there, all of the people had to say if they were recipients the year prior, right? They have to acknowledge that they've received grant funding prior. And all of them reported receiving grant funding the year prior, but not one of them, all of them followed that up by saying they have yet to receive a reimbursement. So for 12 months, that agency was running on reimbursements that they never saw. I don't know how in the real world, in the nonprofit, you know, in the private world, they would be charged interest or there would be liens or whatever. You know, you can't leave your kids out there in the street or however you want to say it. And the MCOs work this way too. So it's kind of on their timeline, and it's really hard to manage a business when you have those kinds of restraints.
For sure. No, 100%. I mean, cash flow and access to capital, I mean, is always, I think, a big challenge for almost every company.
Right.
So I guess obviously now, right, in 2024, you know, people and organizations are looking for the best use case for AI. So is AI something that you use in the business? And if not, do you think it's something that could help you out, you know, in 2024?
Yeah, we consider, and the owner of this agency together, we're considered early adapters. So I call my ChatGPT Gloria. I'm like, oh, Gloria's on it. Gloria will do it. We love Gloria. So we're trying to find more innovative ways to utilize that. But no, absolutely. You know, if it's one less thing that I have to do, of course, I'm gonna try to utilize that. So whether that's something as simple as writing a job description for somebody, for like, we just onboarded a driver, so there's no barriers for adolescents to come here because transportation, I didn't feel comfortable giving a 16-year-old struggling with substance use a bus pass. It didn't sit well with like my spirit. So I'm like, we have to get a driver. We have to write for a driver. So I need a job description. So just Gloria. So these things here and there, and it's a big help. You know, it takes a lot of pressure off me to think now I have to stop everything I'm doing to write this job description for a driver.
For sure. Well, I guess like just like, you know, in 2024 in general, like what are some of the goals for the organization?
Yeah. So I think right now we're really trying to focus on the sober living component because housing is such a need. So really what we want to do is be able to take people through the continuum of care. It's not really appropriate for someone who, let's say their last date of use was maybe 2 days ago and they want to go to outpatient programming. I understand that as a clinician, we're supposed to meet them where they're at. I also understand that I need to keep the other members of the home safe, you know? And so we're trying to bridge those gaps how we can, whether that's collaboration in the community or providing that need ourselves, you know, if that's something that we're able to do. So I think for that, that's something that's really significant. Something else that's really significant for us. So peer recovery support services, as it stands today, I believe the reimbursement rate is $17 for 1 hour. And they can only get, I believe, I want to say, you know, 42 units at 15-minute units. So I think it's kind of silly that, number one, peer recovery support services would be regulated to a certain number, because if someone is in early recovery and they really have a good relationship with their peer and they want to talk to them every day, I think that that's appropriate. That's what a sponsor would do if you were in a 12-step fellowship. So I think for us, what we're trying to do is figure out collaboratively how we can leverage pre and post data to get managed care organizations to not just acknowledge and respect peer recovery support, but assign it a proper value so that agencies can have a business model based on reimbursements for peer recovery support. So that's something big that we're looking into too. And then for us specifically, really specifically, we would really like to get some of the Resilient Nevada funding. So that's the opioid litigation funds that come directly into the state. That fund pool, we call it the Resilient Nevada Fund. So I would be interested in securing some of that funding because that's going to be distributed over the course of the next 13 years or so.
For sure. So what would you say is like the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you got into this industry?
You know, I think very like intimately, I think the most that we can do is just really keep a light on for people. I am not the agent of change or facilitator of change in someone else's story. I'm really just bear witness to this. And maybe I say something that's inspiring, or maybe I say something that just gets them to explore something a little bit more. But I am not the facilitator. And I think we have to and especially with adolescents, I see this all the time. There's not a lot of respect when approaching adolescents, especially when they're intentionally causing problems, intentionally, you know, trying to be distracting during group. But, you know, even a small client, a young client, still has dignity and worth. And they have had life experiences that probably have made them more mature than me in a lot of cases. And so I think that that's really the most important thing for me that I wish I kind of knew in the beginning, is that we just are bystanders, that we're just kind of holding the light open. So
for sure. Yeah. I mean, there's only so much that you can control being in that, you know, sort of industry. So if we're going to have this conversation again in 1 year from now, where do you see things going for the business?
Well, I'm just doing reporting now, and I believe we'll probably not have housing. We'll probably have a unit complex. I believe it's going to probably look like a few floors of housing. And then I think we're outgrowing the space. We just moved, and I really already feel that we've outgrown in December we just moved, and I feel like we don't have enough room already. So, I see us getting bigger or having multiple locations for the adolescents, because I know there's some areas that are just, where using is more prevalent, especially certain high schools. So I'm hoping we can get into high schools too, and maybe provide this during a class, what we provide out there. I don't know how we're going to take a pool room into the classroom and, you know, the PlayStation 5, but, I think we can do something kind of fun that has some psychoeducation and has some fun elements and kind of try to remake what we experience out there in a classroom.
Awesome. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing your website or social media? I guess best ways to get in contact with you.
Sure. They can go to ari@tinhih.org.
Awesome. Well, I want to say, Ari, thank you so much for your time today. We're rooting for you guys to have a very successful 2024.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time. Have a great day.
Thanks. All right. Bye.
Bye.